There we are. Hi, everyone. This is Dean Haglund from the branch office of Rational Exuberance here in the shadow of the Griffith Observatory in the heart of the Middle East, Western part of Los Angeles.
No.
Well, no.
I could not be more east side.
I guess that's true. Yeah. I don't know, but you're west from me.
Right.
So technically. Anyway, this is your...
take two.
No, this is fine. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with my, as always, co-host, who's always been beside me, Mr. Phil Larness, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Dean Haglund. This is, of course, the post-production offices of Rational Exuberance.
Where nary a computer works.
Oh, boy, you have no idea. You know, in fact, at one point this weekend, I couldn't get either the Mac tower or the laptop to work at
wow.
all.
Wow.
And we've been having... Receiver problems here on the wireless mics.
We're hilarious.
We are recording with equipment unlike what we usually use.
Which may be better audio quality.
Who knows?
Or
who knows? If this works, we may be recording future installments this way.
Yes, because this would be handy.
We've done it before.
Yes.
Converting video into our audio show.
Audio, stripping it out, as it were.
But this might be good for traveling.
Yes.
Might make it easy. Rather than the big heavy mixing board.
It's a big suitcase to carry.
It is.
And those, now that we've seen really light microphones that can plug into an iPad and record your whole show, I'm now thinking our whole system stinks.
We haven't yet seen that.
All right. No, I'm just saying, you know.
We may see that
out and about
on the Monday Labor Day show.
If we don't actually record an actual Labor Day show at Dragon Con.
Which I'm thinking is a pretty safe bet, since we recorded one yesterday.
Yeah, but that was just a backup. We could still try shoot for one, because it's exciting to be at Dragon Con.
Of course, we'll still record things at Dragon Con.
Oh, okay.
And then in the future, we would let people hear them.
I see.
Wouldn't we?
I don't know. Maybe we'll go live.
So
I love when we have production meetings on the air.
No, I know. I guess we ought to say that we're going to be at Dragon Con,
yes.
In Atlanta.
It's going to be exciting.
This coming Labor Day weekend,
yes.
You are performing improv comedy.
Yes, brand new improv comedy. I am improvising an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer with Claire Kramer, and I will be doing my best impersonation of Spike. I'm bringing a leather jacket and hair gel.
I bet James Marsders will actually be there.
Oh, he might. I'm trying to...
He was there when last we were there in 2009.
Right. I don't know if he'll come, but I'm going to put on the worst Cockney accent a la Dick Van Dyke in that Disney.
Was it really bad in Mary Poppins?
He was actually very good. I, you know what, it's a very good Cockney accent, but I'm going to just mock it. Because he doesn't have one in real life. That was him. That was some fine acting.
Oh, in James Marsters or Dick Van Dyke?
James Marsters.
Really? He doesn't have an
no.
accent? Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, see?
I only know of him from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I never saw.
Right.
So
so therefore, his British accent is completely lost on you.
We will, of course, be showing The Truth Is Out There.
Yes, our documentary.
In Atlanta, Dragon Con. I think that's on Sunday
night? I'm
going to
say Sunday night.
And so we hope everyone will come and see that. Of course, we'll be selling the film from your
selling
table.
From the table. But that screening is going to be absolutely free. If I'm
It right. is an absolutely free screening, of course
One
it
of
is.
The rare ways, free ways to see the movie.
And no, we do a lot of kind of free screening. In
oh, yeah,
fact, the following weekend.
Oh, yes.
We will both be in Portland, Oregon on the 10th anniversary of the towers coming down on 9/11.
Right.
We will be in Portland, Oregon for a big 9/11 commemorative event.
Yes.
And the pilot to the Lone Gunman will be shown.
Yeah.
Also some never-before-seen footage of the interview you did with your gunman partners.
Gunman partners? Not gunman-esque partners.
No, they were the
Actually,
gunman.
They were the gunman, yeah. weren't they? Bruce and Tom.
Much of which has been heard before on a previous installment.
Yes.
Of Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, though it has not been available for quite some time.
True.
And, of course, this is footage that has never before been seen, and we're editing it together, again, to show the audience at this 9/11 commemorative event. And then the evening caps off with, again, a free screening.
Look at that.
Of The Truth Is Out There.
Wow. Is there a website for such an event?
There will be, I'm sure, when they let us know what the specific details
wow.
are. And of course, by next week, I'm sure we'll be able to post on our website all
yes.
the specifics. But basically, the bottom line is this. If you're going to be at Dragon Con in Atlanta and you want to attend a free screening of it and ask Dean and I questions afterwards, look in your Dragon Con program. You'll be able to find out exactly where it is. Or you can, in fact, check... The Truth Is Out There page on Facebook, facebook.com/truthmovie.
Truth Movie.
And you'll be able to find all the details because we posted that some time ago.
Right.
And if you're going to be in the Portland area on the weekend of September 11th, just put that, save the date, as they say.
As they say.
Because we'll be doing a big event there, and that'll be a lot of fun.
Yes.
Now, you have been very busy on
Holy
set.
Crazy busy.
You talked about this last week. You were shooting for a new cable network, U2.
U2 TV, where U2 can be on TV. U2, the first social TV network. U2 TV and U2.com.
You're not actually on set right now.
I got to do somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 or 400 of these interstitials. In between each episode of The X-Files. So they're very specific to the episode. I'm giving behind-the-scenes stories, some recaps, and then it's this network is going to be... the idea is that there's the ability to record 15 seconds of video, which then is immediately uploaded into the same episode. They have some algorithms and some filters to do a check, but then basically you can go on your computer or you can download an app to your smartphone and use the camera... on your smartphone or tablet, record 15 seconds based on whatever the topic is. You know, do you believe in aliens is like one. And then immediately it'll be in that same episode.
And see, that's very exciting because I would imagine that fans all over the world will be able to participate in that way, even if they don't get the cable network, obviously.
Right. They could still sort of follow along by going to the website. And I don't know if it's going to stream at the website. It might. I'm not sure all the technology involved because I literally have just been shooting.
You've just been doing the Robert Osborne sections.
The Robert Osborne sections, exactly. And starting at 7 a.m., mind you. So when you see this thing on the air, I want to remind everybody, that's me at 7 a.m. in a suit or a nice shirt or something like
that. It's also you at 7 p.m.
Well, yeah, it's going to air at 7 p.m.
No, but I mean, you've been working like... 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Yeah. It goes all
because
day.
Because you, in this shooting batch, you're doing all the host segments, the interstitials,
Promising.
And the interactive segments for the first 60 episodes?
60 episodes. So it'll be like the first...
Three seasons.
First three seasons.
Yeah. Not quite the first three, but that is
and
intense.
It's a blur, yeah.
And you are going to be doing this right up, I think, until the time you get on a plane to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, that's right.
How many episodes are we through at this point? You've been at it now 6-7 days because you were there this weekend. How many episodes are you through?
Well, that's funny. We had this argument on set and nobody could be sure because it's all some of it's gone to editing and some of it hasn't. So we think we've broke the back of it. So we're past 40 to 45 episodes. I only have about 25 to go, I think.
Well, maybe that would be 15 if it was 45.
Oh, yeah. Right. This is the argument we had. So
you don't have to do any math.
No.
Because it's all on a teleprompter for you.
I was told there'd be no math, and I was told I didn't have to memorize anything. So, yeah, about 15 to go.
So you are back on television, and you are...
delightful jokes.
And it's, of course, X-Files related.
Yes.
Of course, Vince Gilligan, who contributed so much to the X-Files, is on television with his award-winning and just fantastic and back at peak form Breaking Bad. And big news that Frank Spotnitz, who has been writing and producing on the Cinemax series Strike Back,
right,
just sold a series to Cinemax.
Oh.
And I can't actually remember off the top of my head the name of it.
It's not Star Chamber.
Well, I've got to tell you, it sounds a heck of a lot like that thing he was developing for Gillian Anderson for British television.
Oh, really?
About a female security
agent who's the very emotional and they're
ass kicking.
That's
the premise that was sold to Cinemax as a new series.
Really? That's pretty cool because I know when I talked to Frank, he said that Gillian was really interested and then didn't like the rewrite so much. So then...
She was out.
And they were shopping it around.
Yeah, and so it's been sold to Cinemax, but I don't think there's any actor attached.
Ah, so now there's a casting call.
And what was interesting about it was that he kind of developed it because Gillian wanted him to.
Absolutely. They had a meeting and said, Gillian, what would you like to do? She goes, I want to do a kick-ass agent thing.
And so he developed it for her. She loved it. It was taken, I think, to either Sky or BBC, one or the other. And...
As an actor does not like the rewrite, doesn't like the
rewrite. Well, because the network passed on it. The other network in Britain, BBC or Sky, liked it.
It's
been months since we heard this story, so I'm not quite sure exactly, but wanted changes because they didn't want to just take leftovers from
the BBC.
And then they approved the rewrite, and then Gillian dropped out.
Right.
And if they didn't find a replacement, it was going to be dead in the water.
Right.
And so apparently it was put in turnaround, as they say. But now he sold it to Cinemax here in the... So you've been on Cinemax. Frank's going to be back on Cinemax. But it's really interesting because it was developed for Gillian, and of course she won't end up
doing it. And so I take it this means he's going to be shooting it here, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, where is Strike Back being made?
I thought that was over in the UK.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. But he's been working on that, of course. Am I allowed to ask you? Well, I guess that's not the real question. I'm allowed to ask you.
You allowed me to ask
but
you.
But I don't know if you're allowed to answer.
To say.
But what you guys discussed, you and Frank discussed about X-Files 3?
Probably, because it wasn't that top secret.
No, I mean, he...
He said, I said, what's the deal with the third movie?
And because, of course, there's so many fan sites, so many people want a third X-Files movie.
Right?
And I ask this because of the fact that still to this day, there's this sense, I think, that, gosh darn Fox... If they would only give the approval, if they would only give the go-ahead, why are they
holding back the man?
Why are they holding back our beloved X-Files 3? And to find out that, in fact, they're not holding it back at all.
Yeah, there's just no energy behind it from Chris Carter. His heart really isn't into it at the moment. I'm sure, because as I heard, he's on fabulous mountain climbing and surfing. I imagine that would, it's hard to go... Oh, my God, I'm going to stop surfing in Bali, and I'm going to go and just sit in a tiny room with a laptop and churn out a grueling, screenplay. It is hard work to write.
But basically, Frank said to you, if Chris wanted there to be a third X-Files, there would already be a third X-Files.
There would already be a third X-Files, yeah.
So as far as I would guess, that means there ain't ever going to be a third X-Files movie.
Well, I don't know if
unless he gets Bernie Madoff or something. Right?
No, I don't think it's about money. I think it's about having a very compelling story.
Well, right, or something to prove to himself, and I don't think he... Yeah.
Well, but, here's the thing. X-Files 2, the story, in my mind, wasn't as amazing as some other stories they'd done on the X-Files. Revisiting them while this whole week of shooting, I've forgotten really how compelling some of those scripts were and how amazing the X-Files series was, and yet... to get that quality to a third feature, that's a lot of heavy lifting, and that's that impetus, that story has to be there, and I think that'll come to him one day, but it's going to be divine inspiration.
Well, I was going to bring this up later, but it is a good segue if you're going to do a remake, if you're going to do a sequel, if you're going to do some sort of continuation of a storyline, boy, your heart has to be in it. It has to be in that story.
True.
Otherwise, we already know where it's heading, right?
Yeah.
The obvious joke that has been made to us, and maybe you've made it, but it's been made enough, which is that understandably... Chris Carter's heart needs to be in the third movie, but that didn't stop him from making the second movie.
Ouch!
Right?
Yes.
And I'm a fan of the second movie, whereas, you not so much.
Not so much. Yeah,
but,
you know.
It's fascinating because, of course, I was just reading earlier about while he was promoting Cowboys and Aliens, of course, Harrison Ford was asked again about Indiana Jones 5.
Right.
And this was the... really seemed to put the kind of the dimmer on in terms of the possibility, because he said he would still love to do it, but only if George could come up with a story that all three principals, Steven Spielberg, Harrison Ford, and George Lucas, agreed on. Right. And it seemed like it was getting fast-tracked a while ago, but that seems to mean, again, no story. Everyone can get their heart into.
Exactly.
And as opposed to, let's say, Ridley Scott doing a new Alien movie after... don't jump ahead. Nope. Let's not bury the lead. after 78 was the first Alien.
Yeah.
So we're already 33 years after the first Alien, and the original director of the first Alien is back doing an Alien movie. Seen some clips.
Where did you see clips?
Online? They were, pirated online.
What?
It looks so amazing.
Really?
But for the longest time, you know, he signed on to do this. The idea was that it was going to be a prequel.
Right.
And no script, no story treatment, nothing. He was just getting so frustrated, Ridley Scott, because his heart was in it, but not in any of these stories that were being presented. And finally, Damon Lindelof, a very successful writer, very gifted writer, one of J.J. Abrams' partners and collaborators, he approached and apparently had written a spec script set in the Alien universe.
Oh.
But not relying on any of those stories. So again, think maybe more like Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Right.
As Ridley Scott calls it, a cousin to the first film.
Ah.
It's in that universe. And it's called Prometheus. And supposedly it's fantastic. And it's set on, the Alien homeworld.
Right. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Why didn't they just go to the Dark Horse comics? Some of those Alien comics that they did back in the 90s, Jerry Prosser was a great writer, some of the artwork, those were some scary-ass Dark Horse graphic novels based on aliens.
Ridley Scott is one of the people who points out that comic books are completely unvisual, and he starts with the visual. Mm. So...
Comic books are unvisual.
Unvisual, yeah.
Because the way the comic book artist has drawn it has already robbed me of my...
Well, it's just, I've heard this before. I mean, it is not a visual medium, interestingly enough. You know,
I guess it is a literary medium.
And so it's fascinating. I don't know if that would excite him in a way that he needs to be... to visualize it.
Even as you say, the Alien homeworld, I can't, you know, it's been so long since I read all the Dark Horse Alien comics, but I totally recall an Aliens episode where it was on their homeworld, and it was terrifying. It was an absolutely terrifying comic book. And so I'm hoping great things. I'm just saying it might have already been done. To put rain on the parade.
Well, yeah, because nobody other than the five people who read those comics are going to care.
Take that, Dark Horse.
Especially, yeah, so...
Suck it, Dark, in your whole line of... Oh, what do you mean? It's a very popular series.
Right, I'm sure, which means what? 0.01% of the American population has read it?
You're right.
Yeah. It doesn't... Yeah.
Okay,
it doesn't,
fine, you're right.
It doesn't hurt it, you know? So, The other thing, of course, that you wanted to blurt out about is him being on board a brand new Blade Runner.
I know, and that scares the crap out of me.
I actually have now been reading how scared people are about this.
Right.
And I don't honestly understand it. I thought that was great news, that they're going to do, again, another film within the universe that they've established with Blade Runner. And this is very exciting to me. I mean, this is why... You know, Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine worked because they weren't sequels,
right,
per se. They weren't reboots. They were in a universe that had been created, and it was a universe rich with
parallel
possibilities.
Universes, yes, and black holes and time
certainly
jumps.
The world they created in Blade Runner
amazing.
was only mined to a certain degree. I mean, if there is a story to be told...
That's true.
Why
not get that whole visual element?
There has been pretty, informed reporting that it would not be with Harrison Ford at all. So again, it is something completely standalone.
Yeah.
Completely new.
I would think that, there'd be sort of, I would think the invention of the Nexus 4 or something like that, like I would go back a bit to where the Nexus 4 replicants come out.
So you would prequel it.
I would.
Which is really interesting because then what you're saying is that the first Blade Runner, which came out 37 years before it was set, would be followed up by a Blade Runner that was basically set the year it's coming out.
Yeah. Oh. And then it has to
they've got to
go post-nuclear.
They've got to figure out how the world comes, how San Angeles comes to be. That is interesting.
That is interesting.
How do they basically split our timeline we live in with the fictional timeline to set up Blade Runner?
Right, because that's November 16th, 2014, right? That's
2019.
No.
Is 2019 Blade Runner. But that's fantastic. I mean, that is an interesting actual prequel idea that we might be giving writers all over out there now. Because you think of all the science fiction movies. I mean, you think about the fact that, you know, 2001 is come and gone.
Yeah.
And we still watch Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, and it still is futuristic.
Yes.
I mean, except for the companies that have gone out of business
or whatever,
the
brandings. Yeah.
But it's still futuristic, and it's sort of disappointing in that sense, but you can still enjoy it in that way. And I always think about that, like, again, with Star Trek, how they would give a timeline of history in the original series, never thinking anyone's going to be watching these shows 30 years hence, when in the 1990s, the eugenics war broke out.
I know. Case in point, 1984, right? H.G. Wells' book, that was supposed to be so far in the future, the Big Brother thing. And then, 1984 came and went. And
so what an interesting storytelling to create a universe
from present
that spins off from our world
to
create this alternate timeline that allows for the fictional film so that you can keep enjoying it
That'd
40 be good. Years after 2019.
Right. That's awesome.
That is kind of fun.
Okay.
That is fun. Now, I, of course, thought...
Now I'm excited about the show.
I, of course, thought that it, you know, there were sequel possibilities to Blade Runner, certainly where they left it, especially in the director's cut.
True.
But again, if you're not going to go to Harrison Ford, then...
Yeah, I know. But you know what I was always curious about? Those off-world colonies. A new world awaits
of
in
course.
The off-world. Like, all of that, like, what's going on, and why did, and how does that work, and like... And that blimp that's selling it, do you take that blimp to your new off-world suburbia? Is it like, and is it a suburban Stepford Wives kind of hill?
I have always had this theory, by the way, that Alien and Blade Runner are in the same universe.
Ooh.
You know, all that talk about the corporation and there are replicants.
Oh, that's right. And we want to bring back a perfect genetic monster to then use in the corporation to start the... So you can sort of crossbreed a DNA aliens with a replicant and form some sort of super monster that has a shelf life, but then can automatically extend its own end date.
Just like Heidi Klum. I'm sorry, you said super monster. I thought supermodel. I'm sorry.
What? Wow, there's a reference I did not see coming.
She does extend her own end date, though. It really does.
Like all robots.
Now, on the other end of the spectrum,
okay,
from Ridley Scott and having your heart in it and these interesting projects revisiting much later in life as a different man, and that's...
We've talked about actors visiting roles that may not...
Yeah, it's exciting when artists revisit a similar trend. Painters as well, right?
Yes.
I mean, when they revisit certain inspirations.
Michelangelo going back to the Sistine Chapel to paint the Last Judgment on the far wall 30 years after he did the ceiling. Did you know that?
No, I don't think I did.
Yes, if you go to the Sistine Chapel, there's the ceiling he did... and then 30 years later, he goes back to do the Last Judgment after all the popes have died and the meaning has changed and society has gone from Renaissance to Counter-Reformation to, kind of this throwback. It becomes this whole new context in which to see the Last Judgment, i.e., when we're going through books that we're reading. I just read The Last Judgment.
Did you? Wow.
Yeah.
So that's what Dean is reading.
Yes.
We have not done that in a while.
I know.
I'm reading a book by Margaret Atwood, prolific author from Canada.
Canadian author.
And this was a Man Booker Award-winning book called The Blind Assassin.
The Blind Assassin.
Called the first great novel of this century.
Yes.
And, boy, intricate narrative, parts of science fiction and mystery.
Yep.
You've got a series. You have the point of view recollections of a main character that start the film. And you're in her awareness of what's going on, of something that's just happening, her sister's death.
Yeah.
Then what follows are obituaries interspersed with chapters of a book the dead woman wrote.
Ah.
And that gets you through quite a bit of the book. And then you come back to the woman whose point of view it was at the beginning, only now she's an old woman starting to scratch out some of her memoirs. So you start up a third narrative. And it goes back and forth, and I'm only about a third of the way into it, but it is a wonderful bit. And also such a fantastic description of a place that I'm imagining is real, Port Ticonderoga.
I think that might be made up.
Really?
Yes.
In Ottawa, I think
in
it's
Ottawa,
saying.
Yeah.
North of Toronto.
And, yeah, I think it's sort of a combination of like Aurora and...
oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But it really gives you a feel for an authentic time and place
that's
very
exciting. Her genius is in that.
So, and clearly that's where her heart lies.
See?
And again, as opposed to, say, Ridley Scott, who seems to really be coming to these things because... Look, if he just wanted to do a cash grab at some of his famous titles, he wouldn't have waited for all these scripts.
True
he wouldn't enough. Be taking so long and working so hard. I mean, he clearly has passion for this. His heart is in it. And also, he certainly didn't need to go and revisit those things.
Right.
And I don't think he's someone that would ever want to diminish their legacy.
Right.
Of course, in the case of Alien, the legacy has... to a degree, been diminished once you start making Alien versus Predator movies.
Yes. Well, even Aliens 3 sort of...
The David Fincher one?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got Alien 4, which is Jean Genet.
Jean Genet.
The director of Amelie.
Who speak English, yes. Who there was the translating problem. All he could do was swear in English. So all he did was swear at the actors.
Although some of his actors had worked with him multiple times before, including Ron Perlman. And
oh, yeah.
Had all worked in his French films.
That's right.
You've got an interesting contrast with Ridley Scott in his brother Tony Scott. And they produce television together, right?
They do.
Very successful television.
Scott-free productions.
They've got all these Emmy nominations. They've absolutely invaded the Emmy Awards this year. And yet, as directing, and they both have incredibly successful directing careers.
Yeah.
Tony has some of the biggest hits of the last 20 years. Ridley has some of the biggest hits and three best directing nominations in the
there
last 20 years. Still, Tony Scott, right?
You gonna trash this guy?
Well, he too is interested in revisiting classics. Not his own, though, because again...
Black Hawk Down.
Because again, what classics... No, that was Ridley Scott.
I thought Tony did that.
No.
Ah.
So right. What classics does Tony have? I guess Top Gun he could revisit. Crimson Tide.
Crimson Tide.
Right? And these, you know...
What about the two together? Top Gun's Attack and Crimson Tide. Oh, I see it.
Oh, that is great. And actually, there is talk of a Top Gun reboot, isn't there? But or revisitation with Tom Cruise. But Tony Scott, of course, recently did a remake, Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah,
dear
God.
Lord.
Dear Lord.
Why?
And now, because that went over like gangbusters, he's redoing The Wild Bunch.
Oh, no. Oh, my stomach just hurt.
Yeah,
just
and
in a knot.
There
Seriously.
Are rumors that it's not even a Western, that they're updating it.
Oh, no.
Like, what's it going to be? Rappers doing one last big score.
Exactly.
That idea was pitched to me, though, by John Giroto, the rappers doing one last score, who was one of the first, of course, we know, on your LA Confidentials tour.
That's right.
If you don't know what we're talking about, Dean Haglund gives tours of downtown Los Angeles.
That's right.
The film history, the architectural history.
The website will be up soon.
LA Confidential Tours.
Yes.
And if anybody's going to be in Los Angeles and wants a tour from Dean Haglund in downtown LA, they can write him at dean@deanhaglund.com.
Or at chillpackhollywood.
At yahoo.com. And of course, we encourage everyone to write us at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. Not only about that, but if you have any questions about our film or about this show,
Or where we're going to be.
Or where we're going to be. Or questions about filmmaking. Pretty much anything. Reach out to us there. We do answer our emails, and sometimes we answer them here on the show.
We love doing that.
What else do we got? Oh.
We got so much.
Yeah, there is. We always do celebrity deaths. We always touch on celebrity deaths.
And school closing.
And we would be remiss, I think.
Oh.
Podcasting royalty, as we have been dubbed,
yes,
by none other than Mark Hirschhorn of Succotash Show.
Lovely.
It would be wrong if podcasting royalty did not stop and comment upon the passing, the death of the Queen of Hollywood at age 95, Edie Wasserman.
Oh,
the longtime wife of super agent, the first super agent, Lou Wasserman.
The guy who brought Universal and MCA together.
Right.
Won the beginning of all the mergers of our entertainment, colossal merging entertainment. Guy will be rolling over in his grave now with the Comcast, Mediacom, Viacom, the takeover of everything. That guy.
That guy indeed.
His wife.
And his wife, who was dubbed the Queen of Hollywood, did so much fantastic work with charity,
yes.
One of which is the Motion Picture Television Fund, and which, of course, has helped take care of so many people within
right.
this industry.
In the retirement home.
So a woman with apparently an enormous heart and who left behind quite a big legacy.
Yeah. So, American Motion Picture Fund still continues?
I think so. It got saved.
It did get saved. Yeah.
Because it would have been to the absolute shame of the entire industry if it had been closed.
Yeah, because all these actors, all these great actors in a retirement home, you're going to just shove them out.
Yeah, and getting great health care, too.
Yeah.
Another woman who left behind quite a startling legacy who died in her 90s, right around the same day, former First Lady Betty Ford.
Oh.
Died.
Oh, that's right.
At 93.
Same age.
And, it's really interesting, isn't it, that she is probably better remembered
for rehab.
Maybe not for her addiction,
right?
But for the center that bears her name.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize. I thought she just set up the center. I didn't know she was actually a member as well.
Yeah, she wasn't just the president. She was also a client.
Member. Exactly. Yeah. And so,
she wasn't only the wife of the president. She was also a client. That's the joke.
Damn it. It took us 12 minutes to get to
that. For those who don't know, and God bless you for not knowing, we're referencing the Hair Club for Men commercials. Look them up. I'm sure they're on YouTube.
They're hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, she's passed away at 93 as well.
And the Betty Ford Center that bears her name is a rehab center through which I think virtually every celebrity, in order to earn a SAG card, had to go through a program.
Okay, for the kids out there, you don't have to get a SAG card by going through Betty Ford.
And maybe the next celebrity to be checking in may very well be Gerard Depardieu.
Oh no, what's going on?
Oh, you've been so,
I've been so busy
in your production bubble.
Yeah.
This thing almost slipped without hitting the news, except that a YouTube video of Anderson Cooper trying to report it and not being able to get through it without laughing became viral. So that's how this story broke. Gerard Depardieu, I'm gonna consolidate different reports because there are accounts of people who were on the plane. There are accounts of Gerard Depardieu. There are the flight crew. Mm. There are the airline spokespeople.
PR.
There are the friends of Depardieu. And I'm going to consolidate a story that I believe to be must be pretty close to what happened because of how it all ended up playing out.
Awesome.
Okay. Gerard Depardieu, drunk on a plane.
What a surprise.
What a shock.
It's free booze up in first class.
And he needs to use the bathroom.
Okay.
While they are waiting to taxi for takeoff. They are not at the gate anymore. They have gone out.
So he's not even in the air yet?
No, not in the air.
So he's just, he got drunk.
They're on the ground. They're on the ground. I'm sure he got drunk in the airport.
Oh, yes.
And then, you know, in the lounge, the first class lounge,
yes,
whatever.
It's all free.
So he was very agitated about this. He started to get up. He said to the flight attendant, I need to, you know, I'm probably not in the language that he's using. No, he didn't say I'm an old man.
Mon Dieu.
No, I need to use a bathroom. I need to use a bathroom. I need to go to the bathroom. They wouldn't let him. They said, you know, not until we're up in the air and the seatbelt sign is off for your own safety. It'll be 15 minutes. Now, this is what they told him. Now, what everybody needs to keep in mind is they'd been sitting there on the tarmac waiting to be cleared for takeoff already for 20 minutes.
Right.
So there'd already been a 20-minute delay.
Okay.
So her 15 minutes estimate probably wasn't based on anything because she just said it to him without even checking to see, let me see if we can have you use the restroom or let me see how long it might be.
Right.
Which one might think someone would do. Depending on the energy they're confronting.
The only problem is then you're cleared for takeoff and somebody's in the bathroom, you by the FAA rules cannot take off.
Right. However, again, couldn't you ask? Couldn't you ask the pilot, do we have any real estimate of what it'll be? Because there's
an old man.
By all accounts, he was in some distress.
Okay.
So much so that a friend or a traveling
companion,
because he was on his way to Dublin for a film.
Okay.
Flying Air France from Paris, Charles de Gaulle to Dublin.
Love it.
Gave him an empty bottle.
No! No, he did not!
And so Gerard Depardieu unzipped and proceeded to fill the bottle.
T-bombs.
Spilling much of it onto the floor.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. At which point the plane was halted. He was brought back to the gate. He was taken into custody, escorted off the flight.
No. For spilling urine.
Yeah, for spilling urine. Now, why I think that that's pretty close, that the worst-case scenarios, as described by the stewardesses and some of the other customers on the plane, why I don't think their worst-case stories actually happen are because no charges were filed.
Right.
No fine given him by the airline or the airline authorities
at
all, and he was put on the very next flight.
After his bladder was empty.
Nonstop to Dublin. There was nothing done
to
in any way, shape, or form, which makes you think, look, there was enough blame to go around altogether.
Yeah.
What I love about this story, and you knew there was something that had to tickle me.
Absolutely. You wouldn't bring
it's
up.
twofold. One,
you don't have to bring up a pee story in a plane.
I think Gerard Depardieu's pee is a great name for a punk band. That's the first thing. But secondly, I love that you urinate publicly, it gets on the floor. All that happens to you is that you get to fly on a clean plane, whereas everyone else was stuck on a plane with your drunken urine circulating through the air system all flight long.
My God. Surely they had to have some sort of carpet cleaner they sprinkled down.
Oh, and then that would get to be in the air system.
I feel bad for the traveling companion. Surely he thought this was the solution. He had to stay on the plane, I bet. And was he holding the bottle of pee afterwards?
I don't know.
There's
some other odd celebrity behavior I would like
to. Is it in the star? Maybe the solar flares. Remember those giant solar flares 2 weeks ago? I think it's affected all solar.
I thought there was absolutely no solar activity going on right now at all, that we've entered this period.
Yeah, right now.
That it's all stopped.
But 2 weeks ago, there was a massive
And now it's absolutely
dead.
Still. It's absolutely still. And they expect it to be for many, many years.
Wow. Well, that's good.
Interesting.
Sign.
Tom Hanks.
Uh-oh.
Apparently is reimbursing people
for the movie
for Larry Crown. Yeah. If you see Tom Hanks in public, he apparently gives out cash to fans who did not enjoy Larry Crown.
What?
He was at a gas station, I think, in the Pacific Palisades, and fans of his approached him and said, "Oh, you're our favorite movie star, and we just saw your movie. Oh, yeah, what did you think? Well, it was not your best work. We actually really hated it." And he said, "Well, I would like to pay you back for this." And as the wife is saying, "No, no, we can't do that," the husband took the $25, and they got in the car and drove away. So apparently he's...
Wow.
And what was so funny about this was the joke that I wanted to use was when I read the headline, "Tom Hanks reimburses... Larry Crown customers," my joke was going to be both of them.
Right.
Right, because, well, literally he did probably find right. the two people
who did see it. You know, good on him.
I don't know if I mentioned this. When I was in Harlem at the end of June, everywhere I looked, Larry Crown billboards.
Billboards, I know.
In Harlem.
For the whitest movie. I mean, I don't even know...
Yeah, I wouldn't waste money in Harlem on movies on billboards for movies that nobody wants to see.
I guess there was cheaper. It was cheaper to put up there. I don't know.
But it is just extraordinary. Ever since then, I've started to really pay attention to movie ad placement,
right?
Because so much money is spent on this marketing, and you know, there's all this talk. How do we keep the budgets down on making the movies? Lone Ranger, being directed by Gore Verbinski, starring yeah. Johnny Depp. Who have combined on three of the top 10 hit films of all time. Jerry Bruckheimer, who's produced so many of the all-time
big
films. The plug got pulled on their Lone Ranger because the budget was too big.
Right, went to $270 million.
Right, they won't make it over $215 million, so they're trying to figure out how to bring the budget down. At a time when you're back to needing three times the budget at the box office in order to break even, just to break even. And I keep thinking, well, doesn't the marketing costs have to come down. The distribution and marketing costs need to come down. And it is so interesting how often I just see money wasted in marketing. I'm driving into 1600 Vine, which is the W Hotel.
Oh, yeah, the W.
And into
W
one of their Hotel. Parking garages. And there is a gigantic wall painting billboard of Steven Soderbergh's new film, Contagion, as you're driving in. But it's a one-lane entrance, and while you're getting your ticket, all you can see out of the window of your car, be it the front window or the side passenger window, is one little square of it, which probably makes up 1/15 of the ad. So you've got to strain and look and maybe get out of your car to see what the hell the movie is advertising.
And maybe that's the whole point of that.
But you can't, because it's a one-line tunnel
right.
to get in. And it's just like, where are we going to spend the money to put this ad?
You know, this is a whole sub-industry, and I met somebody whose job it was to travel around the world, no less, and find empty blank spaces that they could use for marketing. So, and his big one was the checkout stand where they put an ad on the floor. Have you ever seen that? Where
yes,
they put a decal
yes.
on the floor? That was his, because he was standing there just thinking, looking down, going, what else have I forgotten to buy, and where's a good place to put an ad? And suddenly he was like, he looked up and down, and everybody was looking down at the same time, and he thought, this is where ads should be. And so suddenly they sold floor space at the checkout for ads.
Wow.
Yeah. So I imagine that that's probably the same guy. He was driving in, getting his ticket, going, hey, a blank wall. Surely we got to put something there.
But wouldn't it just be better to put up just an 8.5 by 11 replica of the poster on top of the machine, or right next to the button where you're clicking for
Absolutely.
The ticket?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't that be so much less expensive
so
and better?
So much less expensive. And I think this is the thing about marketing. You know, in our age of digital, socially connected networking that we all do, that the crazy... brick and mortar.
You know what we should do? We should make up a whole bunch of "truth is out there" stickers, and we should sticker every time we're using any machine or anything like that on an in and out point. So
that's right. So you
everybody
know
has to see it. That's vandalism, actually. Yeah. Technically,
that's technically vandalism. If we paid for that, that would be marketing.
That'd be marketing.
Pay for your vandalism, and that's marketing.
And on the subject of money just
being thrown,
apparently there being so much money that you can just cast it out to sea.
I didn't know this.
That's literally what PayPal founder and Silicon Valley billionaire Peter Thiel is doing.
He's
so far just given $1.25 million to back the seasteading Institute. Have you heard of the Seasteading Institute?
I don't think I have.
This is an institute that is planning and designing and eventually going to be building, they say, sovereign and libertarian nations in international waters on floating oil rig-like platforms.
Oh, how fun is that? So that's similar to the idea of that computer hard drive that sits out 200 miles outside of England that my friend had all his graphics on, so he never paid taxes because the IRS would always ask, where does this stuff originate? International waters, it's a tax.
According to an accountant I used to know very well, the Church of Scientology keeps many of their riches in a series of boats in international waters. She had to go and do accounting. Flown out by helicopter out to...
these boats, the Sea Society.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
So you apparently are interested in that. I, of course, am thinking now that it's actually not happening, that it's merely the premise for the prequel to Waterworld.
Ah!
To set up how all this
world came about,
yeah, in the first place.
As we go into, well, doesn't it make sense if it's a floating oil platform, then we don't have to worry about the seas rising with global weirding.
Right.
We can just sort of float up and down on the 10 to 20 foot increase as the landmass decreases. You can have your libertarian society out and follow marine law. And marine law is completely different than any jurisdiction. It supersedes jurisdiction of all other countries. Did you know that?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's true.
Well, just because people have told you it's true doesn't make it true.
No, but you look in the law books, marine law.
Yeah, I have.
And what does it say?
yeah. Again, just because people, and by people we mean Jordan Maxwell.
Oh, not just Jordan Maxwell. Other people have said it.
Yeah.
Oh,
you can get yourself into some trouble, I think, with this maritime, citing this maritime
really?
Law. Yeah.
I'm going to go out there and I'm going to cite it. Don't kid yourself.
You know, for example, the definition of international waters is in...
It
depends on what country you're talking to.
What? No, I thought it was the 200.
Yeah, no, they're... No, that's not standard.
Oh.
Yeah, in fact, I don't think the U.S. recognizes the 200 mile.
Then why are they...
Yeah. Sometimes it's 17, sometimes it's 3. It just depends. Yeah, so where's your maritime law now? Where's your Messiah now?
Where's your Messiah now?
If anyone knows the answer to these questions, please, by all means, write us at JoelBeckHollywood@yahoo.com.
Subcategory of our show.
You've been just shooting the TV...
In my production bubble, as you say.
I've seen some movies.
Oh,
and,
dying to see some movies.
The thing that I want to talk about is not so much necessarily about any of these individual movies, but what has been very exciting to me in 2011
yes.
is the emergence of two hugely talented actresses as bona fide movie stars.
Really?
One is Emma Stone, who was well on her way after, was it Easy A?
Easy A.
The modern day riff on Scarlet Letter.
Right.
Who played Ryan Gosling's love interest
in Blue Valentine?
No, in Crazy Stupid Love.
Crazy Stupid
That's
Love.
Michelle Williams.
Thank
in
you.
Blue Valentine. And is the lead, or is she the lead? This is part of the controversy surrounding the movie The Help.
Yes.
About the plight of the
maids,
the black maids, the African-American maids in Mississippi during the height of the civil rights conflicts.
Right.
And based on the book. Anyway, there's a lot of controversy apparently about, among other things, the issue that does bother me a lot of times of, okay, we're gonna tell a movie about the plight of some group of people, and of course we're going to tell it through the eyes of a white person. Anyway, I don't want to get into that choice in the about the film, but just to say that she's the real deal. Emma Stone is the real deal, and she's funny. She's certainly got her way with comedy, equally
drama.
Adept at drama. She is easy on the eyes, as they say, and yet not a model.
Right.
You know, I mean, she's a real person.
Real person,
and. And ever more lovely, the more authentic she's being in her role. And so it's exciting.
Are you smelling Oscar time?
For her in this film? No, not necessarily. But the film will get a lot of nominations. There's no question about that. Certainly Viola Davis will get one. But it's just exciting when
you see a movie star.
When you actually see a movie star, when you actually see someone who's going to get to carry movies, and you just hope that, you know, everything as looks. She now gets offered all the things that either is turned down by or used to be offered to Natalie Portman and Anne Hathaway, you hope that maybe she has in herself or in those managing her a little bit better selection, project selection, right?
Than Anne Hathaway and Natalie Portman?
Yeah.
Yeah, turned down Star Wars. That was the...
But I mean, certainly Anne Hathaway is at the point where her star is in real descent because of overexposure and really kind of sort of goofy, lackluster.
Goofy idea, goofy choices.
You know, and also, quite frankly, from her performance on the Oscars, although, you know, it's interesting, isn't it, that James Franco was supposedly dead after the Oscars, and now with Rise of the Planet of the Apes, he's back when everyone said, oh, we thought he was way too overexposed, and everybody was turned off by the Oscars. Meanwhile, Anne Hathaway... I kind of get the feeling more people disliked her on the Oscars, and it drives me nuts because she at least tried.
She
was a professional who tried. But she made kind of the unforgivable mistake in this day and age, which was she wasn't cool, because caring is not cool.
Right.
Whereas James Franco didn't give a fuck, so... You know, at least that's cool. At least he knew it was shitty, so he didn't try.
Keep a street cred.
Anyway, but I didn't want to talk about Anne Hathaway. I wanted to talk about Emma Stone, the ascendancy of Emma Stone. And another actress who's in this film, whose very first scene had me literally say out loud, oh my God, she's great.
You said that out loud?
And this actress's name is Jessica Chastain. I'm wondering what else have I seen her in? I know I've seen her in something, and I want to see other things because she's extraordinary in this movie. It turns out I had just seen her in one of my favorite films of the year in such a different role, such a different film, and looking so different that I didn't put it together. She's the lead in Terrence Malick's Tree of Life.
Really?
And the film really is hers. She is, and now this is a woman who is drop-dead gorgeous and a real actress, and again, the range on this is so extraordinary. And what's fun about seeing this happen for performers like Emma Stone and Jessica Chastain in movies like these is that nobody has said to them the thing that I hate that gets said in so many auditions these days.
Right.
The bullshit that passes for direction... Yeah, okay, on this take, do less.
Do less.
Tone it down.
Tone it down. Take it down a notch.
Yeah, what tone is it that we're trying to achieve? And then we can figure out how to maybe modulate that tone, right? Do less. I mean, how much actors must be sick and tired of hearing this when actually you got into this business hoping to get to do more and more and more, getting to dig deeper, delve deeper, explore.
Right.
And
but you have to retranslate what the director said, because clearly the director has no acting training, so all he's seen is he wants that performance that he's seen in other movies, where it seems that...
No, I disagree with you wholeheartedly. Really? I think more and more and more people are terrified of any kind of genuine emotion, any kind of genuine moment. They don't know what to do with it. And when I say people, I mean filmmakers. I think more and more. Look at the movies that we have. There's so many of them. Entire movies have not a moment of credible humanity.
That's
in
true.
Them. And because a lot of filmmakers are stuck in their head and don't have any...
Right, and they're scared of any actual moments.
And like you said also, maybe it's just that they have no experience with actors or acting. They fear the process, and when we fear something, we decide just to damp it down altogether.
And I've taken a couple of great acting classes where they have said, okay, we're going to give you bad direction, and so this is your ability to translate it into something workable for you as an actor. So when you hear do less, what they mean is do more, but invite the camera in so that you internalize, so that you don't have to project outwards, but bring the camera into your being so that all of that emotion, that your relationship to the camera is much deeper, so that you don't have to pour so much out. get to cross that space to the camera.
As opposed to the way filmmaking used to be, where when real filmmakers are making it, which is, you know what your job is? To position the camera in the right proximity.
I know.
In the first place.
Hello. Tell me about that. But that's a whole nother story.
Anyway, so very exciting. Jessica Chastain is so great. And here is someone who really had done a couple of independent films, few episodes of TV, basically went back and forth between doing stage and episodes of television shows, and now has really been able to show what she's capable of, and it's so exciting.
I'm going to look for future projects.
And, of course, for women to get to achieve movie star status, that also meant that there were actual female roles being written in the first place that let them show their stuff. And finally, one film that I saw by a woman who has clearly established herself as a movie star, it's her directorial debut. I'm talking about Vera Farmiga, recently Oscar-nominated for Up in the Air, and her film Higher Ground.
Oh.
And this is about evangelical, born-again Christian community. And focuses on a woman who desperately wants to feel the faith that she's living her life by.
Right.
And it's an interesting film and a really interesting choice for her to make as a directorial debut.
Oh, she directed that, yeah.
Yeah, and when it's not trying to be clever...
Not a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, when it's not trying to be clever, when it's not trying to have those kind of funny moments, it's this remarkably effective, very simple and honest movie. And it's really, again, a reminder of how, amidst all the cleverness around us, and, oh, by the way, all the rancor and all the noise and all of this, sometimes the best way to cut through it is just by being very simple, straightforward, and honest.
Right.
And that's true probably not just in storytelling, but maybe in discourse and in public policy and all of this as well.
And perhaps podcasting.
Perhaps podcasting. And that, of course, brings us to a conclusion of another installment.
Simple, honest, compelling...
Chillpack Hollywood Hour.
Chillpack Hollywood
You know, Hour. Every episode of Chillpack Hollywood Hour,
sure
someday again, will be able to be found.
Awesome.
Many of them now can be found at Chillpack Hollywood at chillpackhollywood.com. Sorry.
Yes.
C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K Hollywood.com.
Yep.
You can download and stream them. You can subscribe via iTunes.
Please do.
We also have a button for the really simple syndication subscription. You can subscribe to the RSS. You don't have to have iTunes to subscribe to it.
It'll just come
and
to you automatically.
Thanks to Will Stroh, for the first time in a long time, that link is actually working incorrect. Because he wrote me and told me about the problem, and I was able to get into the WordPress and figure it out, and we got it working.
Hooray!
So if you want to subscribe but you don't want iTunes, or you would rather try a different type of subscription, it's, of course, absolutely free, and as its name indicates, it's really simple syndication.
Ah.
So thank you, Will, and thank you to everybody who checks us out that way. Of course, thank you to everyone who listens on Jackalope Radio.
We love Jackalope.
And on the Talk Superstation, TalkSuperstation.com.
Yes. Also follow us on Twitter. I'm D. Haglin.
And I'm Phil Larinus.
Yep.
And since we have just a minute left, for anyone who's a new listener who wonders why is it called Chill Pack in Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, this is, of course, we used to have a sponsor, the Chill Pack, and we've talked about it on many shows. You can go back and hear about that. We are currently without a sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
We always call it Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and I don't ever want to change that name because I like what it connotes. I like let's never forget.
Never forget
the inventive spirit. But we are without a sponsor. And there was a news story that made me think of a way we could find a sponsor.
Ooh,
Dean Haglund.
That's crazy.
Did you hear about the big deal that was struck between Abercrombie & Fitch, a very successful store, right?
Yeah.
Retail clothing store. Abercrombie & Fitch and reality star from Jersey Shore, The Situation. Did you hear about this?
No. Oh, I think I did.
A very lucrative deal was struck between Abercrombie and Fitch and The Situation.
He was giving cash.
They are paying him an insane amount of money in order that he not wear their clothes any longer. I kid you not.
That is awesome.
Because him wearing it sends altogether the wrong message of the type of client they want. So they are paying him not to wear his clothes. I have got to think there are a whole lot of clothing manufacturers and, quite frankly, product manufacturers who would pay us a little bit of money in order not to wear or use their product.
Well, let's start looking for that. We'll begin tomorrow naming and wearing everything we got one by one and seeing who gives us a call. Great idea.
I'm always thinking.
Always thinking. That's what we love.
And that's why I'm your friend in podcasting, Phil Lernis.
I'm Dean Haglund. See you next week.